Hey, everyone. Welcome back to AI Special Report. I'm Skylar Monroe. I run an AI research lab at a FANG company, and this is where we dig into the stories shaping the AI landscape right now. Huge thanks to our sponsors. Ada, helping clients integrate AI into their workflows. Ago Consulting, that's Ago, your go-to for silicon development from AI to SOHI. And Zen Semiconductor, an umbrella company with a portfolio of silicon industry companies, including Ada for deploying AI at scale, and their Glow Accelerator that makes AI models run faster and cheaper. Today, we've got a loaded episode. Data centers are breaking American politics. Energy costs are going through the roof. AI is making us worse at spotting fake news. And 11 Labs just dropped something big for the audiobook world. Let's get into it. All right, story one. And honestly, this is one of those pieces where the headline almost sounds like satire, but it absolutely isn't. Wired A, I ran a deep dive titled, How Data Centers Broke American Politics. And the subhead is what really gets you, what the Unabomber Steve Bannon's tech guy and Bernie Sanders taught me about the great data center backlash of 2026. Yeah, that sentence contains multitudes. So let's unpack what's actually happening here. Data centers, the physical backbone of every AI model, every cloud service, every streaming platform, have been quietly metastasizing across the American landscape for years. And for a long time, most people didn't think twice about them. They were just these big gray boxes out by the highway, maybe near a river for cooling, maybe in the suburbs of Virginia or outside Phoenix. But something shifted. The build-out accelerated dramatically with the AI boom, and suddenly these facilities aren't just appearing near industrial zones, they're showing up in people's backyards, near schools, next to farmland. And communities are pushing back hard. What makes the Wired piece so fascinating is the political coalition that's formed around this backlash, and it is genuinely strange. You've got environmental progressives who are furious about water usage and energy consumption. You've got rural conservatives who feel like their land and communities are being steamrolled by tech giants. You've got libertarian-adjacent anti-tech voices who have been warning about corporate infrastructure sprawl for years. And somehow, all of these groups are landing in the same place. They don't want a data center in their town. The reference to Steve Bannon's tech guy is particularly interesting from a political strategy standpoint. The populist right has found in data center opposition a potent wedge issue. It lets them position big tech as the villain in a very tangible, local, visible way. This isn't abstract. It's that company is about to build a massive facility that will strain our power grid, and they got a sweetheart deal from the county commission. And then you throw Bernie Sanders into the mix, and you realize this is one of those rare issues that scrambles the usual left-right divide. When the Democratic Socialist and the Nationalist Populist are reading from the same playbook, something real is happening. The Unabomber reference, and I want to be clear, this is historical context, not an endorsement, speaks to a longer thread of American anti-technology sentiment that predates the internet. There's a strain of thought in this country that views large-scale technological infrastructure as inherently dehumanizing and threatening to communities. And what's new is that sentiment is now finding mainstream political expression. For those of us in the AI industry, this matters enormously. We tend to think about compute capacity in terms of gigawatts and rack density and latency, but there's a whole other conversation happening in city councils and state legislatures about zoning, water rights, property taxes, and who actually benefits from these facilities being built. The practical implication is that siting data centers is going to get harder and more expensive. We're already seeing municipalities pass moratoriums, require environmental impact studies, and demand community benefit agreements before approvals go through. That adds time and cost to infrastructure build-out at exactly the moment when demand is going parabolic. If you're an investor or a developer in this space, you need to be thinking about community relations and regulatory risk as seriously as you think about power procurement or network connectivity. The technical problems are largely solved. The political and social problems are just getting started. Story 2 takes us in a pretty different direction, into art, architecture, and philosophy, but with a very real AI underpinning. MIT AI News covered a new exhibition at the Keller Gallery featuring the work of Alexandros Haridis, who did both his SM and PhD at MIT. The show is called Beyond Data-Driven Aesthetics, and it traces centuries of ideas about aesthetic judgment while exploring how design can make complex computational systems visible. Now, I know some of you are already thinking, Skylar, this is a tech podcast. Why are we talking about a gallery show? And I hear you, but stick with me, because I think this is genuinely important for practitioners, and especially for leaders in the AI space. The core question Haridis is asking is, how do we see what's actually happening inside these systems? AI models are famously opaque. Even the people building them often can't fully explain why a model produces a particular output. That's the black box problem, and it's one of the central challenges of the field. What's interesting about approaching this through aesthetics and design is that it's not a technical solution, it's a perceptual and philosophical one. Herodotus is drawing on centuries of thinking about how humans make judgments about what's beautiful, what's meaningful, what's legible, and he's asking whether those frameworks can help us build better interfaces between humans and computational systems. There's a long history and design of making invisible systems visible. Think about the London Underground map. The actual geography is a mess, but Harry Beck's design in the 1930s made the system comprehensible. Or think about data visualization as a discipline. The question Herodotus is raising is whether we can do something similar for AI. Can we design representations of these systems that give us genuine insight rather than just the illusion of understanding? This connects to something I think about a lot in my own work, which is the difference between interpretability and explainability. Explainability is often about generating post hoc justifications that satisfy users. The model said X because of Y. Interpretability is actually trying to understand the internal mechanics, and right now, we're much better at the former than the latter. What I appreciate about Herodotus' approach is that he's not pretending there's a clean technical solution. He's sitting with the complexity and asking how we develop the aesthetic and conceptual vocabulary to even talk about these systems. That's a slower kind of work, but it's foundational. For designers and developers in the audience, this is worth paying attention to. The field of AI visualization and interpretability is going to be enormous. As AI systems get deployed in higher stakes domains, medicine, law, finance, infrastructure, the pressure to make them legible to non-experts is only going to increase. The people who figure out how to bridge deep technical complexity and human comprehension are going to be incredibly valuable. And there's a broader cultural point here too. Art and science have always been in dialogue, even when the institutions try to separate them. Exhibitions like this one at MIT are part of how a society develops the cultural frameworks to understand new technologies. That matters. It's not separate from the technical work. It's part of the ecosystem that shapes how AI gets built and governed. Okay, story three, back to data centers, but this time we're talking about the raw economics of powering them. TechCrunch AI reported that natural gas power plant costs have surged 66% and now take 23% longer to build. In some cases, costs have nearly doubled in just 2 years. And the primary driver is data center electricity demand. Let me put that in context for a second. We are in a moment where the demand for electricity from AI infrastructure is growing so fast that it is materially reshaping the economics of power generation. Not incrementally, dramatically. 66% cost surge in 2 years is not a blip. That's a structural shift. So what's actually happening? Data centers require enormous amounts of continuous, reliable power. We're talking about facilities that can consume hundreds of megawatts. Some of the hyperscale campuses being planned now are in the gigawatt range. That's the equivalent of a large city's power consumption concentrated in a single industrial campus. To meet that demand, utilities and independent power producers are rushing to build new natural gas generation capacity. But here's the problem. Everyone is rushing at once. The supply chains for turbines, transformers, specialized construction crews, and long lead equipment are getting stretched thin. When demand outpaces supply for capital equipment, prices go up. We're seeing this play out in real time. The 23% increase in construction timelines is arguably more alarming than the cost increase. Cost you can sometimes absorb or pass on. Schedule delays are existential for a hyperscaler that has committed to customers on a timeline. If your data center is supposed to go live in Q3 and the power plant feeding it is running 6 months late, that's a massive problem. There's also a compounding dynamic here. Higher power plant costs get passed through to electricity rates, which increase the operating costs of data centers, which squeezes margins for AI infrastructure providers, which puts upward pressure on the cost of AI services. It's a chain reaction that ultimately affects every company building on top of cloud AI. From an investment standpoint, this is a really important signal. The constraint in the AI build-out isn't chips anymore, or at least it's not only chips. Power is the binding constraint in many markets. Companies that can secure long-term power purchase agreements at favorable rates are sitting on a strategic asset. We're going to see more vertical integration, more direct investment by hyperscalers in power generation, and more aggressive lobbying for permitting reform. There's also a renewables dimension here that the headline doesn't fully capture. Many of these data center operators have made big public commitments to run on clean energy, but you can't spin up a solar farm in 6 months to meet an urgent demand spike. Natural gas is the bridge fuel, which is why we're seeing this surge in gas plant construction. The tension between sustainability commitments and operational reality is real, and it's not going away. For AI practitioners and developers, this is why infrastructure costs are going up. It's not just about the cost of H100s or the price of cloud compute instances. It goes all the way down to what it costs to generate a kilowatt hour of electricity in a constrained market. The physics and economics of power are increasingly central to the AI story. Story 4 hits close to home in a different way. MIT AI News covered new research out of the Media Lab showing that AI can make us worse at detecting fake news. And the framing they use is perfect. They compare it to how GPS has weakened our navigation skills. That analogy is doing a lot of work, and I think it's exactly right. So the core finding, when people rely on AI tools to help them assess whether news is accurate, they get worse at doing it themselves over time. Their independent critical evaluation skills atrophy. Just like when you stop reading maps and just follow the voice, you lose the ability to orient yourself without it. This is a form of cognitive offloading, and it's one of the more nuanced and important critiques of how we're integrating AI into information consumption. It's not that the AI is giving wrong answers necessarily, although that's also a real problem. It's that the act of delegating judgment to a system erodes your capacity for that judgment. And fake news detection is not a trivial skill. It requires lateral reading, going outside a piece to check sources, understanding context, recognizing rhetorical manipulation, having a mental model of how information ecosystems work. Those are muscles. And if you outsource that work to an AI consistently, those muscles weaken. The timing of this research is significant. We are entering an environment where AI-generated content is proliferating at scale, where synthetic media is becoming harder to detect, and where the information landscape is genuinely more complex and adversarial than it's ever been. The last thing we need is for the tools meant to help us navigate that environment to be simultaneously degrading our ability to navigate it without those tools. There's a parallel in education that I think about a lot. There's a real debate right now about calculators, not the new debate about AI and homework, but the old one about whether having calculators in classrooms weakens students' number sense. The research on that is mixed, but what most educators agree on is that you need to build the foundational skill before you introduce the tool that automates it. You need to understand what multiplication is before you reach for a calculator. The same principle might apply here. We may need to invest in media literacy and critical thinking skills as foundational capacities before we hand people AI fact checkers. Otherwise, we're building dependency without capability for AI developers, and this is a design and product challenge. Not just a research observation, how do you build systems that augment human judgment rather than replace it? How do you surface reasoning rather than just conclusions? How do you design for skill maintenance rather than skill atrophy? These are genuinely hard problems, and they're not getting enough attention in most product roadmaps. For leaders and policymakers, this research is relevant to discussions about AI literacy, education, and how we think about public information systems. Deploying AI at scale in contexts where the quality of human judgment matters is not a neutral act. There are second-order effects, and we need to be designing for them. And honestly, just on a personal level, this is a good reminder to maintain your own critical faculties. Read primary sources, check things yourself. Use AI as a starting point, not an ending point. I say that as someone who uses these tools constantly. The goal is augmentation, not outsourcing. All right, final story, and this one's got some real industry implications for media, publishing, and voice AI. TechCrunch AI broke the news that 11 Labs, one of the leading voice AI companies, is now letting authors create and publish AI-generated audiobooks directly on its own reader app. This is a significant move on multiple levels, so let me break it down. First, some quick context on 11 Labs. They raised a $180 million mega round last month, which already signaled they were gearing up for something big. And just days before this announcement, they partnered with Spotify for AI-narrated audiobooks. So this is a company that is moving fast and clearly has a strategy. The strategy appears to be become the end-to-end platform for voice AI content. Not just the voice synthesis technology that other platforms license, but the publishing infrastructure and the consumer-facing app where people actually listen. That's a vertical integration play, and it's smart. Think about what this means for authors. Right now, if you want an audiobook, you need a human narrator, a recording studio, a producer, and a distributor. The cost and time barrier is significant. Most books never get audiobooks at all. AI narration changes that math dramatically. An author could potentially generate a professional quality audiobook in hours at a fraction of the traditional cost. 11 Labs is positioning itself to own that workflow. Generate the audio with 11 Labs voices, publish directly to the 11 Labs reader app, reach listeners. That's a closed loop that creates real platform lock-in and recurring revenue potential. The Spotify partnership is also interesting to read alongside this. Spotify is the dominant audio platform globally. Partnering with them gets 11 Labs distribution and legitimacy. But building your own reader app is about controlling the relationship with authors and building a direct audience. These aren't contradictory moves, they're complementary. Cover the distribution side with Spotify, build the creator side with the direct publishing program. Now, the questions this raises are real. Voice actor and audiobook narrator communities have been vocal about the threat AI narration poses to their livelihoods. That's a legitimate conversation, and it's not going away. The guild negotiations and legal frameworks around voice likeness and synthetic media are still very much in flux. There are also quality questions. Human narration is genuinely an art form. A great narrator brings emotional intelligence, pacing, character differentiation, things that AI is getting better at but hasn't fully cracked. For literary fiction especially, the narration is part of the experience. For nonfiction, business books, technical content, the bar is different and AI narration is increasingly good enough and arguably already there. From an industry structure standpoint, this is another example of AI collapsing traditional value chains. The audiobook industry had a pretty stable structure: authors, publishers, narrators, studios, distributors. AI is compressing several of those steps. That creates opportunities for some players and existential challenges for others. For developers and entrepreneurs in the audio space, the platform layer for AI-generated audio content is being built right now. 11 Labs is making a big bet on owning it, but this market is going to be contested. There are real opportunities in specialized verticals, educational content, language learning, accessibility tools,